Welcome to Season 2 of the Why Me with Vera Lee podcast series, proudly brought to you by Visual Lee Designs. We've listened to your feedback over Season 1 and implemented a slight change in the way we release episodes in order to bring more of what you asked for. So now we've added tips and tricks from Vera Lee, that's me, every second episode in bite-sized pieces where I recap the key points from our guest conversations, delivering more value to you with inspiration and connection, and to help empower you through your own adversity. I love reading your comments and appreciate your support in sharing this podcast with those you feel will also enjoy the content created for you. One of the easiest ways to do this is simply to leave a rating and review. If you would like my support in helping you to find your why, you can contact me at Vera Lee Original on social media or search the hashtag WhyMeMovement, because what follows that question, why me, is the movement. It's up to you to take action, and I am here when you are ready to help you see a different perspective and to choose your own hope and happiness in life. I know the power of my story. I ask you, do you know the power of yours? Today's guest is Debbie Larkin of CO Vault. Debbie has witnessed the immediate and ongoing effects for a child and their family after sexual abuse. As a social worker in this specialized area, she holds a deep desire to start and continue those essential conversations for raising awareness and allowing others the permission to speak of their own experiences. In her book series, For the Children with Love, Debbie writes fictional stories about real life situations. Her main character is inspired from her own social work experiences, and she embeds these valuable messages throughout the story she creates, with her vision of educating everyone how to better protect the children being abused every day. And it is partly being due to the hush-hush culture of not talking about this issue. Welcome to the Why Me podcast, Debbie.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
I'm very interested to hear more of your story and why this has impacted you so much in your life, which I understand, but to share, have the opportunity to share how much you're doing with these books in trying to start and continue these conversations. But first, we ask all the big questions here at the Why Me podcast. And the first thing I'd love is for you to tell us something that you have on your bucket list and why you want to achieve this goal.
I would love to spread awareness. I would love to work with people who have been sexually abused and bring awareness and just make a difference. This is so much bigger than I ever thought it would be. And it has become more important to me every single day. And I feel like it is my life mission, and my goal is to just be an advocate for children and to help them.
Yeah. And I think you touched on something really important there, which we'll get into when we do start talking about your story and why you do what you do, in that once you start looking into this issue, you then find so much more that's going on that we don't get to hear about, and that really it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Right, right. As far as fun stuff on the bucket list, I guess I really have always said I want to be a chicken farmer someday. So if you notice, all of my stuff have, there's chickens on everything I have. So I've always said, and I'm a vegetarian, so I don't want to like eat chickens or kill chickens. I just want to own 1,000 chickens someday. So I'm working on it. I have about 20 now.
I love that. Chickens are fantastic.
we have donkeys and alpacas and a horse and a cow and chickens and turkeys and goats and dogs and cats, of course.
Oh, I love that. I would love to see a photo sometime.
Oh, yeah. Lots of fun on the farm.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what book has impacted your life the most?
Honestly, when I think about a book, when people say, what is your favorite book? My all-time favorite book, apart from the Bible, of course, is called The Shack. And I'm trying to even think of the writer. I can't even think of his name right now, but it's called The Shack. And it came out years ago. And this man wrote this book for his children because he wanted his children to know how he thought about God. And it's fictional. And it's about a man whose daughter is kidnapped and the evidence of her murder is found at a shack. So he gets a note, thinks it's from the killer, goes to the shack, and there he meets God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. And they're in completely different forms. And this man wrote this book for his children. And when it first came out, you could not find it. I mean, and I bought it for everybody. And it just gives you such a vision as a Christian. It gave me such a vision of what God wants from us, the relationship that he wants from us. It was never a story I would have read. I wouldn't have read about a kidnapped child by all means, but somebody said you have to read it. And it's probably my all-time favorite book.
Wow. And I've just Googled William Paul Young is the author.
Yes. Yes. And I don't know that he's written other books. I've seen him speak and they did make it into a movie finally. But his story behind how he did it was amazing. And then to be as successful as he is with his story is just, it's remarkable.
And this is one of the reasons I ask this question to each of my guests, because so many books out there that are so helpful may not become part of our consciousness until we hear other people talking about them. So being able to explain why you love a book allows so many more people to go, well, I think I'd like that book too.
Right. And, you know, I had read that book long before my mother started reading. Growing up, my mother never read books. She read Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret by Judy Blume, because somebody said you better read it before Debbie does. So that's the only reason she read that book my entire childhood. Now you can't take her anywhere. She has a book in her hand, in her purse, in her car, in the glove box. She's a huge reader. But she was reading The Shack and she called me and she's like, I don't get it. I don't get why you think this book is so great. And I said, I'm on my way. And I went to her house and I opened it to one of my favorite parts where the character is talking to the angel. And the angel is telling him to choose which child will die. He can have his little one back, but, you know, you have to choose. And how, you know, everybody thinks God just chooses so easily and he makes these bad things happen. And so I started reading it to her and I was reading and reading and I'm bawling and my mom's crying and she's going, I get it now. I get it now. It's like, it's all in how you read. You've got to pull those emotions in when you read and you need to make that movie in your head. I'm a teacher. I teach fourth grade and reading is my favorite thing with the students because it's like, come on guys, you don't need a movie. You don't need television. Get into a book and make your own movie. So,
Oh, I love that. Make your own movie because we do. We make this visual picture in our mind when we're reading something and everybody has a slightly different version of that. And that's one of the wonderful things about reading. And particularly like your mum didn't get it. She said that to you and that opened that whole conversation. And now she's learned a different way. And how wonderful is that?
Right. And I always tell my students, you know, I love the Twilight books. I read them because somebody like said, you need to read these before your daughter does. And then I was fighting with her. I'm like, hey, give me the book. I'm ready to read. And she's like, Mom, it's my book. And I'm like, I don't care. Give me the book. And so we had to fight over it. And I love Twilight. But my Edward, the Edward that's in my head, did not look like that. You know, when the one in the movie, my Edward does not look like that. So, you know, I do love the movies too, and nothing against the actor that played him, but that's not how I visualized it. And that's what's so great about reading is that they become what we want them in our minds. You know, the author, it's our job to describe them and give those little basics, but as a reader, you can make your own movie and it's wonderful.
It totally is. Now, I'd also love to know who's been the most influential person in your life and how?
You know, I have to say probably my mom and my dad. There's just not one. You know, my dad taught me to love reading. He could hold a whole conversation with you while reading a book. He's really just answering you. He's not listening to you. He's reading. But I grew up with a dad who read all the time. And my mom, of course, didn't. So she didn't understand that passion and that love I had for it. But my dad taught me that. My dad taught me to love books. And then for my mom, she's just probably one of the most remarkable human beings in this world. And I mean, right now my dad is very sick, and he actually has shingles. He's in so much pain, and you know, she's right there. Her life stops because she is going to be there and help him. And if he wants to play a game or if he wants to watch TV, she'll be right by his side. And she is an example of friendship. I can't tell you how many times she has been there for her friends when they've needed her. And of course, her family, you know, my sister and I and our children. I mean, she's just this incredible human being. And she's taught me to think of others before myself and to follow my dreams. And the other person is my best friend, Sherry. Her name's Sherry Greensmith. And Sherry and I met in kindergarten, and we're going to be 50 this year. So 45 years, she has put up with me for 45 years. And, you know, I told people I was going to write a book, and I even knew what it was about. And I would tell them, and they'd be like, oh, that's nice, Debbie. You know, and nobody believed me. And when I told Sherry, I'm like, okay, I think I'm going to write my book. And she's like, I've been wondering when you're going to get started. You know, I've known you're always knew you were going to do it. And when I sent her that first, you know, few chapters, and I just waited for that reply. And when she said to me, Debbie, this is good, and I knew you could do it, that's what I needed to hear. And so she gave me the faith in myself that I never had. And she's done that for 45 years, bless her heart. So those three people have influenced me for many, many years. And of course, I have so many people that support me, but you didn't ask that question, so I won't go on.
Time for another conversation, but what a lovely way to be able to publicly thank those people, but also to explain why. I think that the why behind these responses is really important, and often it makes us all take note and listen to our own people in our lives to think, okay, who is it that I am influenced by in my life? And have I gone and said thank you to them lately?
She called me after she left and they went back home after the holidays. And she said, why didn't you have me read your book, Debbie? And I said, Mom, you read Christian love stories. You're not going to like my book. And she said, well, maybe I want to read it. And I said, all right, I'll send it to you. So I did. And she called me and she goes, okay, you're not ready to publish this yet. I see errors. I see this. I see that. You know, she was my critique. And then she got so into it. I would call it 3:30, and her friend would be like, okay, we got to this chapter. Now we need to know about this, and you need to do this. And I mean, they were so into it. And then when I wrote the second book, they were waiting for me at 3:30, and they would text me in the middle of the night, Debbie, you can't let Nevaeh go back to that mother. Debbie, you can't do this, you know, and it's hysterical how excited they get. And we FaceTime and do all of that because they are so into it. And here is somebody who never read anything but a love story until my books. And my mom and her friends are all so incredibly supportive. Sherry's mom is incredibly supportive, Mary. So, and you'll see those names in my books, you know?
Wonderful. Oh, I love that so much. Now, before we get into your story, I love asking my guests to recap a season one episode of their choice and to share their biggest takeaway. So which episode did you choose?
Well, I chose Carolyn Wilson, and I was just beyond impressed with her story. She's a survivor of child sexual abuse and had been sexually abused by her father most of her childhood. Mm-hmm. And there were probably two points that she made throughout that just really hit me hard. I'm hoping I can remember both of them. I probably should have wrote them down. But she said she had nicknames for her body parts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she called it her TT instead of her vagina. And I cannot tell you how irritating that was when I was a social worker. And even as a mom and listening to whether it was my nieces or other people, and they call it all of these nicknames. And I even remember as a social worker asking a girl to tell me what the technical name was. And she was 17 and could not tell me the technical name vagina. She didn't know that word. And it's sad because we need to teach kids to call it by what it is. We need to teach them the proper names. And she pointed that out. And that was huge because I think parents, we somehow get embarrassed. Those are supposed to be bad words. You know, things like that. They're not. They're body parts. You know, we don't call our leg something other than our leg. It should be our, you know, it should be what it is. And I know, you know, when my granddaughter was potty training and starting to use the restroom by herself, and I would say, honey, did you get your vagina wiped good? Did you get it? You know, I didn't call it her cookie or her whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, which is what I hear people say. So I really took that away. I was glad to hear somebody else is saying, teach proper body names. And the other thing she said that really hit was that it felt good sometimes when her dad abused her as a child, it felt good. And I remember we used to have programs and they would call them good touch, bad touch. And they changed the name of that to body safety. And the reason they changed the name of that is because sometimes bad touches feel good. And I thought it was so important to hear somebody say that. And in talking with children who have been sexually abused, I have had one sticks in my mind. She would write me notes and she would say, am I wrong because I liked it? Am I wrong because of this? They don't have the ability to understand and they blame themselves. And that's how these people keep getting away with it. Because they're making the child feel guilty and then the child blames themselves because of how it feels. So, and they're just, you know, it is so sad. But those are the two things that she said. I mean, she said a lot and she just an incredible human being. And I have so much respect for what she's been through and what she's done. But those are probably the two things that really just made me go, oh, yeah, I so agree with you.
Yeah, very. It was a jam-packed episode and it was one of the longer episodes because there was so much value in what was discussed throughout. And those two points are big takeaways for so many people. I also wanted to mention that as an adult who was abused, I mean, I was not abused as a child, I was abused as an adult. And I had those same questions about, well, okay, sometimes my body reacted that it felt good, and yet my heart and my head was saying, no, I don't want this.
Right.
This is, you know, I'm saying this is no, this is a no, why won't you stop? And of course, there are other times it didn't feel good at all, but it was going through with a counselor and working out that, okay, there is an understanding that your sexual organs of your body, when they are stimulated, are going to respond a certain way, whether you want that or not.
Right.
And so trying to understand that as an adult was hard enough to navigate. As a child, wow.
Right, exactly. So it is so important. And that's why this subject is so important to be talked about and not to be hush hush. And, you know, I'm going to say it till the day I die, but we live in this society where you think it's enough to say to your child, don't let anybody touch your private parts. And then your job's done. Well, when somebody touches them, then that person's going to say to them, well, did anybody tell you I couldn't? Oh, you didn't listen to your mom? So it's your fault that I touched you. And then the child's scared. But if we make this a subject that we just openly talk about, like, you know, we talk to our kids about drugs. We openly talk to our kids about drugs. I'm amazed at the things my students at fourth grade know about drugs. We openly talk about those different things and even the hard things.
Yeah.
We need to openly talk about this. We need to make this a subject that is just open and that so that our children will come to us when somebody touches and they know that it's not their fault because they're a child and that person is an adult and they didn't have a choice. And what their choice is to tell. And we just have to get them talking.
Get them talking and to understand that they will be believed when they do.
Right.
Because that's the other big thing that an adult so often is doing this, sometimes a young adult, but adults know less. And they are saying, don't tell anyone because this will happen and that will happen. And so there's that fear on top of, well, no one will believe you. And if you're being told, no one will believe you because I will say this didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. And sadly, you will have those parents that don't believe. And those were the hardest for me personally. And I cannot tell you how many times I would look at a mother and I would brace myself because you never, telling a parent their child's been sexually abused is horrible. And it never gets easy. And I would look at these parents and say something and they would go, they're lying. I'm like, what do you mean? You know, your 7-year-old described this. And they would say, well, they watch too much TV. He wouldn't do that. Well, really? Because now I'm going to remove your kid from you because you're not willing to take care of your child and believe your child. You know, you have to protect the child. And I removed several kids from their homes because their parents didn't believe them. And it's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking because now that victim has become a victim again. And it's sad.
Yeah it is. Why do you think some parents don't believe their kids?
You know, I don't even think I can understand it. Because if my child came to me, I would like to think that I'd believe him 100%. You know, in the two situations that stick out the most for me, the one parent, I think she just relied on boyfriend so much that that's all that mattered. And sadly, in that case, the girl had told a school counselor. I ended up removing the girl and the siblings. Mom tried to hide them from me. I tracked them down at 3:00 in the morning where she had hid them to get the kids. And she had supervised visitation with them. And she told them that she was not allowed to whisper. I mean, that's why they're supervised. They, you know, they make sure they know what's being said. And she kept whispering to the little girl, and the little girl, you know, the supervisor kept saying, you know, quit, don't whisper, you're not allowed. And it went on. And she finally called the visit and said, we're done. You know, you won't stop whispering. And I've told you not to. And the next day, the little girl went to school and told her counselor she lied. The sad part was we knew she didn't lie. The forensic interviewer knew she didn't lie. The boyfriend had failed the lie detector test. The detectives knew they were going to nail him.
Yeah.
But the little girl recanted her entire story and said she lied. And then a few weeks later, she went back and told the counselor that mommy told her at a visit that she would never see her brothers again if she didn't say she lied. And at that point, we could do nothing to protect her.
Yeah.
Nothing. Because she recanted. That one, I don't know if it was just, I have no idea why the mother did not believe her. Another one, it was between brother and sister, and the parents chose to believe brother instead of sister. You know, brother was goody-goody and never in trouble and popular and college scholarships, and they chose not to believe the daughter. And sadly, when it came all out down to it, mom found evidence. The brother admitted it. The courts found him guilty. But the daughter spent a year in foster care because they chose to believe the son. And that would be hard. It would be hard which child to believe. But I don't understand why a parent doesn't believe their child.
Heart-wrenching stories and quite a few things I'd like to speak to in there. But the immediate thing that keeps popping into my mind right now is I know for myself, when I was going through my statements with the police, we went through everything. Nobody ever doubted what I said. It got to the point where they organized an interview with him. And what came back to me was, well, the first thing he said was he denied it. And I just sat there and went, and? They said, well, he denied it. Well, what rapist doesn't deny it at first? Like, this is the part that I don't get. It's like, well, of course they deny it because they know the consequences of admitting to what they've done. And so that's the other part of this is,
I know,
increasing the awareness or whatever we need to call it to people to say, mm-hmm. call them out on that.
Right.
You know, like nobody is going to, I mean, expect that as your first response from these people. Nobody is going to admit to this, or most people won't admit to this first up until they're pressured and given the reasons why they need to be engaging in that conversation.
Exactly.
But fear really does create behaviors in so many situations. And for children, the fear and having people hold things over them is so often what will unfortunately have testimonies recounted. But the thing that people keep forgetting here is that when these children are describing these sexual acts in detail, you still don't see that unless they have access to the dark web and other places. You still don't see that on TV.
Right.
And so to say that they're getting these things from watching too much TV or that's just not the case. And this is the part that really frustrates me, is that people, they keep ignoring that fact. Well, I'm sorry, how does this child of this age can describe everything in this detail?
Exactly. And it is frustrating. And, you know, I was blessed to work with some of the best forensic interviewers, in my opinion. Jill Carr is one of them, and she is amazing. And she's Jillian in my books. And I remember several times, you know, sitting, because the forensic interviewer is with the child and I'm in another room watching a video. And I remember several times going to Jill or to the others and saying, what do you think? And when Jill would say, they're telling the truth, I didn't doubt it. I mean, these are people that are specially trained. They know how to ask questions that aren't leading at all. And, you know, even with the girl that was sent into foster care for a year when her brother had done that, when I went to the social or to the interviewer and said, hey, I've got this girl coming in to be interviewed, here's her name, she was like, oh my gosh, I talked to her years ago. I knew then that something happened and she would not say anything. And now she's ready to talk. And she was excited because finally this child had gotten the courage to talk. And she knew years before that there was so much more than that girl was saying. And sometimes it takes a while. And that's what's very frustrating, as I know of a specific case where, you know, they're not prosecuting the person. They kind of know he did it, but the child's not a good witness. Not a good witness. Well, no, you know, not everybody is going to tell all right away. Not everybody is ready to just spill it.
Yeah.
It takes time. And this particular person, it's been 2 years and there's still little bits and pieces coming out over and over and new things because they're just not able to take it all in. It takes time. And unfortunately, in that time, people are getting away with hurting our children.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think that's a really important point. It does take time. And right, I'm going to refer to my own experience in that I say to people, I lost my voice twice in my life. The second time it happened, I physically lost my voice from treatment to paralyze my vocal cord. But the first time it happened, it was that I couldn't speak about what my husband did to me. And it took me time to be able to leave that relationship. It took me time to go through the police statements and all of that process. It took me time to get into a domestic violence support group around other women who understood without having to explain all the effects and what it was like to be in this state, this emotional state. To have them understand the way that culture is to feel shamed about these things, and to then have the ability to find my voice through, for me, what was a visual format first, and eventually a written format, and eventually I was able to actually speak those words. I mean, that probably took me 4 to 5 years to get to that point. Now I'm an adult.
Exactly.
And we just somehow expect children to come out with everything right at the start. Like, again, this is one of those things that we need to be able to understand. People need time to process. This is very complicated stuff going on and how it affects you at your core. It's Vera Lee from Australia, and I wanted to let you know about the second podcast that I have started, What the Flab, all about those flabby issues to do with weight loss with and without surgery. In this podcast series, I share with you my journey of how I lost 60 kilograms on my own before weight loss surgery, and I document my journey after weight loss surgery with you. I will be sharing my tips and tricks to help you on your weight loss journey, as well as bringing on special guests, including psychologists, nutritionists, surgeons, bariatric specialists, personal trainers, and people just like you and I to share their personal journeys of how they have been successful with and without weight loss surgery. And they will bring their favorite tips to help you. So come and join us as we chew the flab. Simply search WTF Lab as one word on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, you can always contact me at Vera Lee Original on social media if you would like my personal help and guidance on your own weight loss journey. Let's get back to today's episode.
Right, exactly. You know, and I think about television shows like Special Victims Unit, SVU. I mean, they made that show, and people will talk about being raped now. I mean, yeah. What they did was make such a huge difference because it quit being this hush hush, hide about it, don't talk about it, or it's the victim's fault, it's how they dressed, it's how they this, it's how they that. SVU really did a lot. In my opinion, maybe that sounds silly, but in my opinion, it did a lot to get people talking. And I tell you, I don't know, do you know who Jason Bateman is?
I do.
I love him. I love him on Ozark. I grew up with him on his television shows. I have sent him a message and said, I want you to make my books into a movie, into a Netflix series. I want this to be a series where people are watching and talking, and it opens it up to where it's not hush hush anymore.
Yeah.
He responded in a nice way. It could be somebody sitting under a bridge for all I know, but if it's really him or not, but I'm going to believe it's him because that made me happy. But you know, he didn't say he was going to make it into a Netflix. He just was very, very sweet and supportive. So,
And look, at the end of the day, whoever it is that responded, that's one more person that we're opening this conversation with. And this is what it's all about. And with every single person, there's going to be another person that's thinking, maybe I need to do something in my part in all of this. What is there that I can do? And it may not come in the form of a Netflix series yet. But maybe it's got those wheels turning around, you know.
I hope.
And we do what we do for the passion behind it, for the vision, and for the importance of these topics being discussed. And so I was in a clubhouse room just earlier today, and the conversation came up about sometimes you impact people's lives and you won't find out until many, many years later when someone will come back to you and say, yeah, I remember when you said this, and you'll be like, why didn't you tell me at the time?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not everyone finds their voice at the time to say that. And coming back to that question I asked you about, why do you think sometimes parents don't believe their children? Sometimes, and I say this from not personal experience, but experiences that I've known other people have shared, sometimes that's because this has brought up something that they've tried to avoid dealing with in their past. And we know the prevalence of sexual assault, particularly with children, is so much higher than gets reported. I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but it's very, very much on the cards that one or both of them has had an experience where they've been sexually assaulted in some way, and that they may not have gotten the help they needed to be able to process and deal with that too. And so being told that this has happened to their child opens up that Pandora's box.
And I think it also gives the parents, and I've seen this, they feel like they failed, that it means they're a bad parent and that they did something wrong. And that's not true. And, but I think there's this stigma that if your child, if this happens to your child, then you did something wrong because you didn't protect them. And I don't think that's true at all. I think that we do need to talk about it more, obviously, but it doesn't mean the parent failed. I've talked to those parents and they blame themselves. And that's a really hard one on a parent to take blame for such a horrible thing happening to their child. And we need to not blame the parents because those perpetrators, those pedophiles, they're pretty sneaky people. And they're people you don't expect them to be. And they're those people that you're sitting with every day and you're trusting your kids with and their relatives. I mean, I don't know the actual percentage. I wish I had more time in life and I would study so much more about this. But, you know, most of the time, someone that hurts a child is somebody they know. It's not a stranger. Mm-hmm. It is almost always somebody they know. And that's what's so scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I'm hearing here, and this is what happens, everybody else is getting blamed except the perpetrator. And the only person who's to blame here is the person that is committing these acts.
Absolutely. And that's what we need to stop. Mm. We need to stop them. And we need to talk about it so that we can stop them. So,
Absolutely. Now, this is the Why Me with Vera Lee podcast, and usually we come into someone's story, we tell us a little bit about your story and your Why Me moment, and you and I had a bit of a talk before this podcast, and you're a little bit different in that aspect because I wanted you on the show because of the important work that you're doing and that your Why Me moment is not about your own childhood sexual assault. Your Why Me is about being the advocate for others who perhaps can't be an advocate for themselves. And so tell us just a little bit about your passion behind this. And I know that you've gone through a little bit of it, but just give us a bit of a recap why it's so important for you to be writing these books and why you've chosen that method to help get this information out there.
And to be honest, I think that when I started writing the books, it was pure selfishness. It was not about making this huge difference or the goals that I have now. All of that has changed. I always wanted to write a book. I've always loved to read. I always said I was going to write books and I had these ideas, but nothing ever complete. And I was I was a teacher for years. I was actually 35 before I ever went to college and became a teacher. I was 39 when I graduated college. And and so I was a teacher for a while. And then I went through a divorce and a lot of personal issues. I lost literally everything from my house to my job to my security to everything. I had a sick child at the time and just so much was going on. And I kind of lost my mind. And when I came back from that, I went to work at the Department of Child Services. I didn't want to go back to teaching. I had always wanted to work for the Department of Child Services, which a lot of people don't think, you know, they don't go, ooh, that's my goal. But it was my goal. And I wanted to be the assessment worker. I wanted to be that knock on the door that said, hey, you're not going to hurt your child anymore. I'm going to stop you. So I got the job. I was going through the 3 months of cohort. I had my mentor and I was going to different homes and there was drugs or dirty houses and all of that. And we had to go to a training on sexual abuse. And I sat through that training. It was just a few hours. And as I was walking out the door, I said to the trainer, I said, if there's ever an opening on the sex abuse team, I want to do it. I think there's only two in Indiana that actually have a team for sex abuse. And because I was in Marion County, the biggest county, we had our own sex abuse team. And it was within a day that I was being interviewed and I was moved from one mentor to another mentor. I was on the sex abuse team and I finished my training on that team. So unlike so many people who are like getting the drug assessments and the different assessments, all of that, all we got was sex abuse unless we were on call. And when we were on call and I would get a drug assessment, I would be like, what do I do with this? I don't know what to do with this. I only know sex abuse. You know, those were the hard ones for me. I loved my job. I felt like I had this purpose, and I mean, I just loved it. I loved what I was doing. Nobody wanted to hear about my job. Nobody wanted to hear about my day. Nobody wanted, you know, I felt like I was failing my child. I had only one at home left at home, and she wasn't old enough to drive. And she's calling me saying, hey mom, how am I going to get to work? And I'm going, I don't know, because I'm on an assessment and I can't leave this kid. And I felt like I kept letting my own child down, trying to save everybody else's. And so I ended up going back to teaching. And there was a moment where my oldest son had came to me trying to figure out his life. And he said, I know the perfect job, mom. I'm like, what? He goes, give me a list of pedophiles. I go to their house. I say, you touch this little girl. I shoot him. We're done. I'm like, good job, not legal. I'm sorry, you can't do that job. So one night, you know, I went back to teaching and I'm in the bathtub where I think the best. That's where all brilliant ideas come from, is my bathtub.
Yep.
And I'm thinking about my old job. I'm thinking about what my son had said. I was thinking about some things I had heard about with students at my school. And it came to me. It's like, I'm going to write a story about a social worker who is sick and tired of people hurting children and decides she's just going to take matters into her own hands and be a vigilante, you know? And that was my idea. But I never put anything on paper. I was doing that, telling people and watching them go, oh, yeah, right, Debbie. Then about a month or so later, my second son was diagnosed with cancer. As a mother, you know, you wish it was you. You wish you could take it away. You want to fix it. He's an adult. He's married. He didn't need mom, but mom needed to be there. Mm-hmm. And literally, I thought I was just, life was so perfect and everything was so great. And then this happened and it just totally rips the bottom out of your world. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started writing my book. It was what I did to escape my reality of my fear. Cause I had said, you know, if you're going to pray, don't worry. If you're going to worry, don't pray. So I chose, I'm going to pray. I'm not going to worry. And when that worry would start, I would start typing. And so that's how my book was born. Delaney is a lot like me. Her husband is a lot like my husband. It was a lot of fun to write. And as people think, oh my gosh, it's about sexual abuse. Yes, it starts out and maybe if I went back and did it different, I wouldn't start out the way I did in the first book because people are scared to read it. What I can promise you is you're never going to read anything that's going to give you nightmares. You are not going to read details of sexual abuse. You know what happened to the child, but you're not given those details. My husband told me a long time ago, normal people can't listen to that. When I would be at work and I'd be dealing with stuff and, you know, we're talking about it over sushi at lunch because we all did that all day long as a team. But normal people can't hear that and sleep at night. And so when I write my books, I make sure that I write in a way that you know what happens, but you're not going to read details. So you don't have to be scared to read the books. And so I wrote the first book and then I wrote the second book and I'm actually working on the fourth. The third one will be out in March. I did write a children's book in between. People seem to think I'm a children's book author. I'm not. I'll never write another children's book probably. I wrote that especially for my students last year that I didn't get to say goodbye to because of COVID. So that book was written for them and dedicated to them. What happened really the why me, I think, is after I published that book and people started reading it, they started telling me their stories. And, you know, just a few weeks ago, somebody that I've known for years came to me and said, hey, look up this name on your computer. And I said, okay. And I looked up the name and I'm reading this document about this person who's now in jail for molesting his daughters and blah, 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 blah. And I looked at her and I said, did he touch you? And she said, yeah. I said, did you tell? And she said, you're the first person. It was 20 years ago.
Aww.
And I have people openly telling me about their experiences and sharing this. And that brings healing. I'm not doing anything, but giving them the ability to feel like they have somebody that they can talk to. And so that really is what started me saying, okay, there's more to this than just the kind of fun story of Delaney going after these guys. I want victims to feel like at the end of the book, they just got justice. And I think they do. Most of them, anybody that's told me has said they felt justice at the end. They were woohooing and applauding and excited at the end. My friend said, I ran into the living room going, you're not going to believe how this ended. And then I realized, wait, nobody else has read the book in the house but me, and they're not going to understand. But she was so excited. So I think that there's a bigger picture than I ever thought when I started this journey. This journey was for me to keep my mind off of the fear that I had for my son. Mm-hmm. And now it is a journey to get people talking and to give people that justice that we all wish we could do. You know, Delaney's fictional. She can do whatever she wants. How many times have we read a news article about somebody that hurt a child and went, give me 5 minutes in a room alone with them? You know, we all want to be able to make them pay. And so people enjoy the books because Delaney can, because she's not real. And on a side note, I would love to say my son is cancer free, and this is his son that was just born in November. Oh. So this is my grandson, Jensen, who was just born in November. So all good comes out of those trials that we go to. So that is the why. I think it started out as being something just for me, and to be able to say, oh, I wrote a book, and now it's just become this mission. And I will say that I want to find a literary agent that can help me because I'm not a tech person. I'm not that, I don't know how to promote. I don't know how to do those types of things. And I think when they see sex abuse, they go, nope, sorry. And they send me the rejection. You know, I'm not going to take on sex abuse. Everybody's so scared. So I started writing another book that was totally different, not about sex abuse, thinking, well, if I could get an agent using that. And I worked for days last week on this book. And I think I have like 6,400 words. And a couple nights ago, I went, this isn't my heart. I'm going to write my next book. I'm going to start my next story. And I've sat down twice to write, and I'm at 6,200 words. So, I mean, when I think about the fact that I have tried so hard to write something else, but my passion, my goal and my purpose is to get these stories out so people can start talking about it.
Oh, I love everything you've just said there. And I think one of the most important takeaways for me from your Why Me moments and why you've written the book series, you're giving permission to yourself to get something out of the process. And the end result of that process is that you're then giving permission to people, to every single individual that reads one of your books, to tell their story if they want to. And that is huge.
I've had victims come to me and say, I've never told anybody. I want to tell you my story and you can write a book about it. And I'm like, bring it on. I mean, I will listen to you and I will create characters based off of it, and it'll be totally fictional. My books are fictional. Yes, I take things that I've seen and that I've heard. And when you read my books, you read from every character's perspective. So the first book starts with Sadie, which is the little girl. And that's when I say, I wish I probably should have went back and kind of eased people in, because it's like, boom. But you hear from a 7-year-old girl. And when I read the book, I'm a 7-year-old girl. When I'm writing it, I'm a 7-year-old girl, or I think 7 or 9. I write from that perspective. I become that person. When I'm writing from Delaney, I'm the social worker. When I'm writing from Detective Kramer, I'm the detective, and it's based off of one of our lead detectives that I used to work with and his personality. And I pull from all of those things. And when I write from the perpetrator's point of view, I have to become that horrible person. And I've watched enough interviews and I've talked to enough horrible, nasty people to pull from that to make it real. You know, they walk in and they say, okay, I hate Jake. I'm like, I know, you know, he's the bad guy. And you don't want to walk in the room when I'm him, because I'm mean. You know, I actually put myself into each position. And so when you read the books, you feel from each character, you feel what that little girl feels, and you feel what that social worker feels, and the mother and the friends and the all of it. And I've been told you will literally go through every single emotion in this book, from laughing to fear to justice to crying to hatred to, you know, all of it is there. So,
because you are literally going through every emotion to be able to convey that.
Yeah. My mom's friend said, "Don't you cry when you write this? I'm sobbing right now." And I called her the next day as I was writing, and I'm video calling her going, "See, I'm crying." And I mean, I was just bawling. I was like, I cry all the time when I write. So yeah.
Well, I thank you for understanding that process is important in relaying the emotion underneath these characters. I thank you and honor you for putting so much of yourself into this. It is very emotionally taxing to do that process. Even with what I do, I understand that. The end product, if it was void of even one of those characters' emotions, the product wouldn't work. The book wouldn't work. The message wouldn't work. And the vision is going to fall flat. And you are so passionate about this because this is so important to so many people. And I want to come back to something you said earlier about being a little bit selfish and why you started this. I think as human beings, one of the things that we learn to embrace throughout life and when we have experiences, particularly emotional ones, is understanding that at our core, we all want something out of our interactions when we're on this earth. As a mother, we get that through mothering. As a child, we get that through being a child. As somebody who is a leader, we get that through what we get back in seeing and hearing what people get from what we do for them. And so often selfish is used as a dirty word, almost, if you like, too. And I often challenge people to rethink that, because for me, I think that it's important to understand that the self part of what we do is unique to us, and that part of our self is so much a part of what we can do for other people and bringing value. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. So I think out of everything that we go through and the different trials that we go through help us to be the person we are. And I don't know about you, but I've had some bad relationships in the past and bad experiences, and I would not change any of it, because every single thing has brought me to the point that I am right now. And my life is not perfect by all means. My goal is eventually I want to be able to stay home and write books all the time. You know, I don't know if that will happen or not. That's my goal. That's my passion, my love. But everything I've done in my life has brought me to this point. I have a wonderful husband. We live on a farm that I adore. You know, we have animals just because they're pets. You know, we don't have any animals that really are productive. They just cost us money, but that's what we do. And I have this soulmate that does that with me. You know, he doesn't care about traveling or, you know, living the high life or anything like that. We're just simple people that like to sit on the front porch and drink coffee and watch the animals play. So that's our perfect life. And everything I went through has put me right here where I'm at. And working at the Department of Child Services, I loved that job. I was a little old when you think about on call as, you know, 48 hours up all weekend, and I was too old to be doing that. I'm still too old to be doing that. So, you know, I don't stay up well. But I loved the job because I felt like I was doing something to help. And as a teacher, we do that in a way. But when a child is being hurt, I go tell the counselor about it. I can't be that first knock on the door anymore. And that's a hard one because I want to be in control. I want to say, nope, you're not going to hurt this kid. But thankfully, we have a fabulous counselor at my school, and she does that for me now. So, but everything we do leads to the next adventure. And I'm excited for it. And I do hope that people will start talking about this, because we can't stop them if we won't talk. We can't stop people from taking advantage of our little ones if we're too afraid to even talk about it. And, you know, and not just the little ones, the teenagers. And yes, technology is great, but let me tell you, it's a hard world to live in as a teenager. Yeah. Because of technology, when there's so much accessible, you know, that airdrop, you know, when somebody's sitting in the cafeteria and they had sent a naked picture to their boyfriend and now it's everybody in the cafeteria watching it, you know, I mean, that happens all the time. They don't live in the world I grew up in where, you know, I didn't have a cell phone till, I mean, I had four kids before I had a cell phone. So it's just different, but yeah, I think our experience will help us to grow and be the best people we can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And although it's a different experience, we've still got this same old problem that's been around forever. And so, again, let's use the technology in a way that we can help to stop this behavior rather than perpetuate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have one last question for you. Would you be the person today if it weren't for the adversity? And I'm talking about all of your experiences, including the ones that you've witnessed.
No, I would not be who I am today. And that's what I say. I hope that I can use everything that I've been through in my personal life and my professional life to be the best me I can be and help other people to be the best they can be too. And be that confident, a confidant, be that friend, be that shoulder to cry on, or the person that they can tell their story to. I hope I can do that for somebody and make a difference for them.
And I believe you are. Thank you so much for being on here to share your story. And before we go, how can people get in contact with you and how can they get a copy of your books?
My website is Books by Covault, Covault. I will say that Covault was my maiden name, so I use Covault as a way of honoring my parents, and that's the name I write under is Covault. So booksbycovault.com is my website, and there are links on my website. My books, this is the first one, For the Children with Love, Sadie's Story. My daughter, Peyton, Kale, she is a tattoo artist and she drew my book cover. So she does my book cover. So that is Sadie's Story. And if you're going to read the books, I would start with Sadie's Story first. And then this is Nevaeh's Story. And she again drew that book cover. So very proud of my girl. Yeah. So Danielle's story will be out in March. And then I'm working on Aiden's story right now. So that'll be the fourth book in the series. So, but booksbycovault.com is the best way to get to it.
Fantastic. And I will make sure that link is in the show notes so that our listeners can simply click and go.
Yes. Thank you so much. I appreciate you and you taking the time to be with me and let me talk and share my experience and hopefully we can make a difference.
That's what we're here for, to make a difference. And every single voice out there has the potential to make a difference and have an impact on someone.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's hope many someones. Thanks so much, Debbie. Thank you for tuning in to the Why Me with Vera Lee podcast series and honoring today's guest and their story. Here is a short snippet from our next guest and episode to be released. There are so many diseases that are unseen diseases as well. So ones that physically you can't tell if somebody has this disease or not. And so a lot of people are walking around out there with disabilities and people just don't know about it because they can't physically see, and I'm going to use a generalized term here, something quote wrong with you.
Yep.
Instead of looking at the dis part of the ability, let's look at the ability. Let's look at how you do communicate. Let's look at what you can do instead of focusing on, well, I have this and so therefore I can't. So rather than just shutting the door on the opportunity, let's see if there's some creative way that we can get you into this activity, or that we can have you work out a way to get you involved in things that you enjoy and can do well, because we all have abilities.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story related to that. So I was doing an independent living class where I would go into what we call a day center here. You would go into this place because your parents or your guardian had to go to work. So they needed someone to be able to care for you while they were at work. I remember going in, talking to one of the people in there, a parent telling me that their kid couldn't tie their shoes.
Okay.
And I was like, I didn't say anything to the mom, but in my head I was thinking, nah, there's no way. I've spent too much time around your kid to believe that to be true. I intentionally untied my shoes. And I went up to the girl and I said, hey, can you help me out? I need to tie my shoes, but I'm having a hard time getting down there to tie it. So can you help me up? Yeah. And she tied my shoes.
So good.
And I'm like, look, that it's just the more we can create opportunities for people to show us what they're capable of, the more we'll be surprised. And that expectation. So
I'd like to thank Eddie Woodgo for giving his 5-star review titled Heartfelt. It is such an art form to create deep connection with someone in the space of a few minutes. Vera Lee is masterful in this craft. Even as a third party, a passive listener, my heart has been drawn into each story I have heard. I've subscribed. I am hungry for more. I'd like to personally thank you for leaving your feedback in the form of a rating and review so that other people who come across this podcast have the opportunity to tune in and gain value that you yourself have gained from these stories, from these guests, and from the Why Me movement that is behind the Why Me podcast to inspire, connect, and empower you. And I encourage each of you to go and rate and review on the podcast platform where you listen to the Why Me with Vera Lee podcast as a nice way to show your support for our show.